This is Jeff Blankford welcoming you to the November 11th, once Armistice, now Veterans Day, edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month, and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to you, our listeners. Today, capped by an interview with Paris-based journalist and friend Diana Johnstone, whose timely book on Hillary Clinton, Queen of Chaos, has just been issued by Counterpunch Press. That will be coming to you about 20 minutes past the hour, so stay tuned. Diana Johnstone's book is also timely because Hillary and her supporters have been quite active lately in the area of Israel-U.S. relations, an issue that I cover extensively, as you regular listeners are well aware. Or more precisely, I bring you news about the relationship that both the mainstream media and the leading lights of the alternative media tend to ignore. The first piece of news you probably haven't heard about involved a decision by the Center for American Progress, or CAP, a leading Democratic Party think tank, to host Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu yesterday afternoon, a day after his meeting at the White House with President Obama. According to the center's website, it was to host a moderated conversation with Netanyahu and CAP President Nira Tanden, quote, discussing, quote, a range of issues including Iran, Israeli-Palestinian relations and regional concerns, as well as ways to strengthen the partnership between Israel and the United States, end quote. This past week, The Intercept's Glenn Greenwald reported that leaked internal emails from CAP, quote, reveal the lengths to which the group has gone in order to placate AIPAC and longtime Clinton operative and Israel activist Ann Lewis, including censoring its own writers on the topic of Israel. The emails, Greenwald writes, also provide crucial context for understanding the center's controversial decision to host the event for Netanyahu, that a group whose core mission is loyalty to the White House and the Democratic Party, Greenwald writes, would roll out the red carpet for a hostile Obama nemesis is bizarre, given that, quote, Netanyahu has repeatedly treated the Obama White House as a political enemy, end quote. The emails, he notes, show Senate President Nira Tanden, a Clinton loyalist and key aides, quote, engaging in extensive efforts of accommodation in response to AIPAC and the Democratic Party's insider Ann Lewis's vehement complaints that the center is allowing its writers to be, quote unquote, anti-Israel. For years, Greenwald points out, the center has exerted massive influence in Washington through its ties to the Democratic Party and its founder, John Podesta, one of Washington's most powerful political operatives. This group is likely to become even more influential due to its deep and countless ties to the Clinton. End quote. As the Washington Post's Greg Sargent put it earlier this year, CAP is, quote, poised to exert outsized influence over the 2016 presidential race, should Hillary win it, and the policies and agenda of the 45th president of the United States. CAP founder John Podesta is set to run Clinton's presidential campaign, wrote Sargent, and current CAP president Tanden is a longtime Clinton confidant and advisor. On the day Greenwald's article appeared, Netanyahu announced that his new chief of public diplomacy would be Rand Barretts, a right-wing settlement-dwelling academic who had written on his Facebook page that President Obama was, quote, an example of modern anti-Semitism, end quote, and compared Secretary of State John Kerry's mental age to that of a preteen, end quote. As of today, demands from within Israel and the U.S. that Netanyahu withdraw the appointment have been met with only a statement that the prime minister would meet about the matter with his appointee. And then we have Hillary herself writing a major piece in the New York Jewish Weekly Forward last weekend, headlined, How I Would Forge Better Ties to Israel and Rebuild Bond with Benjamin Netanyahu, end quote. After noting that last week marked the 20th anniversary of the assassination of Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, Clinton wrote, quote, this somber anniversary and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to Washington is an opportunity to reaffirm the unbreakable bonds of friendship and unity between the people and governments of the United States and Israel. The alliance between our two nations transcends politics. It is and should always be a commitment that unites us, not a wedge that divides us. End quote. She then describes President Truman's early recognition of Israel, not the way it happened, but the way Israel's advocates want us to believe it did, then recounts her and Bill's first trip to Jerusalem's old city, bewailing the attacks on Israelis with no mention of the far greater number of Palestinians who have been killed by Israeli soldiers and police. Nothing, of course, about that might have caused the current spate of attacks. Israel's ongoing ethnic cleansing of Jerusalem and its expanding of settlements throughout the West Bank. I have stood with Israel my entire career, she brags. As a senator, I fought to get the Magen David Adam accepted to the International Red Cross when other nations tried to exclude the organization, quote. For good reason, I need to interject, because unlike every other similar organization, including the Palestinian Red Crescent, Magen David Adam has an overtly political agenda. Now let's get back to Hillary and her accomplishments on Israel's behalf from an article in last week's Forward. Quote, I wrote and co-sponsored bills that isolated terror groups and pushed to crack down on incitement in Palestinian textbooks and schools, unquote. What she may not know or care about was that this was more of an example of Israeli government propaganda than the truth, as even the Israeli press and Israeli educators later conceded. As Secretary of State, she boasted, I requested more assistance for Israel every year and supported the life-saving Iron Dome rocket defense system, end quote. Her support included, I should point out, an additional $200 million appropriation for Israel from a post-9/11 domestic, yes, domestic funding bill. She did that, moreover, after voting against a $150 million grant to inner-city schools in New York and Washington to cope with the aftermath of the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. She goes on, quote, I defended Israel from isolation and attacks on the United Nations and other international settings, including opposing the Bias-Goldstone report, end quote. This, as you will recall, was a UN-sanctioned report under the direction of South African jurist Richard Goldstone, who's Jewish, that condemned Israel for war crimes for its 2012 assault on Gaza. After the usual claptrap about pursuing a two-state solution through diplomacy, a statement that produces nothing but silence at an AIPAC convention, she gets to the nitty-gritty. Quote, I will do everything I can to enhance our strategic partnership and strengthen America's security commitment to Israel, ensuring that it always has the qualitative military edge to defend itself. That includes immediately dispatching a delegation of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to meet with senior Israeli commanders. I would also invite the Israeli Prime Minister to the White House in my first month in office, she said, implying criticism of Obama, who waited until May. That should have been enough, but there's more. About, quote, preventing Iran from ever acquiring a nuclear weapon, vigorously enforcing the new nuclear agreement, making sure Russian and Iranian weapons don't end up in Hezbollah's hands to threaten Israel, and combating growing efforts to isolate Israel internationally and to undermine its future as a Jewish state, particularly the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, end quote. She concludes by saying that, for me, fighting for Israel isn't just about policy. It's a personal commitment to the friendship between our peoples and our vision for peace and security, end quote. At the bottom of the article is a single line in italics that reminds readers that, quote, Hillary Clinton is running for the Democratic nomination for president, end quote. In response to her article, Israeli columnist Gideon Levy wrote in Haaretz, quote, she and those like her, false friends of Israel, have been one of the curses on this country for years. Because of them, Israel can continue to act as wildly as it likes, thumbing its nose at the world and paying no price. Because of them, it can destroy itself unhindered. Whether Clinton believes what she wrote or simply wanted once again to sell her soul for a fistful of dollars from Haim Saban and other Jewish donors, wrote Gideon Levy, the result is extremely embarrassing. A love letter to Israel, the likes of which no U.S. statesman would ever write to another country, end quote. After writing the above, I noticed a report in Monday's Haaretz that Israel has given the green light to 2,200 new settlement units, two of them what Israel describes as outposts deep in the occupied West Bank. Most likely, according to the article, this was to preempt legal attempts by Palestinians and Israeli rights groups to get the latter sites evacuated at a hearing before the Israeli High Court of Justice scheduled for earlier today. This announcement, however, fits into a well-established Israeli pattern of announcing a new illegal construction before a visit to Israel of a high-ranking U.S. official, as well as visits to Washington by an Israeli prime minister. It is Israel's way of giving the United States the middle finger, confident, as we have seen in the past, that it can get away with it. The new construction was not mentioned by President Obama, at least publicly after meeting with Netanyahu on Monday, when he borrowed from the same script as Clinton. Quote, as I've said repeatedly, the Secretary of Security of Israel is one of my top foreign policy priorities, and that has expressed itself not only in words but in deeds. We have closer military and intelligence cooperation than any two administrations in history. The military assistance that we provide, said Obama, we consider not only an important part of our obligation to the security of the State of Israel, but also an important part of U.S. security infrastructure in the region, end quote. The president expressed his support for Israel's response to the recent violence in occupied Jerusalem and the West Bank, despite the disparity in the number of casualties. From October 1st to Sunday evening, 80 Palestinians have been killed, including 17 children and 4 women, and more than 3,000 injured. The number of Israelis killed over the same period, 12. Although neither Obama nor Netanyahu referred to the details, the Israeli prime minister arrived with a list of U.S. weapons that he wants from Washington and no charge to Israel. Total price of the weapons demanded, if granted, would be $50 billion or $5 billion a year, a $1.5 billion annual increase over the current record level of $3.5 billion. The Israeli wish list, according to multiple sources, including a new squadrons of F-15s, modern tanker aircraft, helicopters, the V-2 Osprey, and large-scale financial aid for the Arrow 3 missile defense system. The list was a result of meetings between officials in both countries. And Israel will be the only country in the Middle East to receive the stealth F-35 fighter when the first ones arrive in 2016. Priced at $110 million each, the 14 that Israel has ordered will be paid for by American taxpayers. More immediately, Israel is demanding a squadron of F-15s, they're $30 million apiece, which would be fitted with the latest Israeli systems. The Osprey, $72 million apiece, can fly like an aircraft and land like a helicopter and would be used for special forces insertions and quick evacuation operations from difficult territory, and is said to be in range of Iran. While the New York Times news department and other news departments have ignored the details of this story, the editorial board of New York Times raised questions about Israel's request on Friday in an editorial saying, quote, it's hard to see how such a large increase could be justified, especially when Congress is trying to keep a lid on federal spending and is cutting back many vital programs. In any case, read the editorial, whatever aid the administration and Congress finally agreed to must be linked to Mr. Netanyahu's willingness to cooperate on matters that are in America as well as Israel's interest. Good luck with that. Even when the very pro-Israel Bill Clinton was president, Netanyahu was never willing to accept suggestions or requests from the White House, and the same was true of Menachem Begin, Ariel Sharon, for that matter, even Yitzhak Rabin. Speaking of payoffs, there was a big one Thursday night in Beverly Hills, where the Friends of the Israeli Defense Forces held their annual gala dinner and raked in $34.5 million tax-exempt to benefit ostensibly what Israel refers to as lone soldiers. Those are young men and women from other countries, the majority, it seems, from the U.S., who forsake their birthplace to join Israel's occupation army. While thousands of U.S. vets are homeless and hungry, and Los Angeles is more than any other city, the audacity and insensitivity of these supporters of Israel would no doubt rankle U.S. vets and their families if they knew about it, and that's something to think about on Veterans Day. But thanks to Israel's friends in the media, boardrooms, and news departments, they won't know about it. It's a glaring example of what's properly called their control of the media. When one considers the big names that came to entertain the 1,200 attendees at the dinner, the Beach Boys, actors Jason Alexander, Antonio Banderas, Liv Schreiber, Jason Segel, and Mark Wahlberg, as well as the KISS frontman, Israeli-born Gene Simmons, that this story appeared only in the Israeli press and the Hollywood trade publications is a remarkable achievement. Even more remarkable when one considers that the promoter of the event was Israeli-American media mogul Haim Saban, Israel's Hillary Clinton's most prominent backer in her race to the White House. 5 of the $34.5 million raised Thursday night came from Saban's bank account. There's another story that has long been buried, and that's how Israel diverted more than 200 pounds of enriched weapons-grade uranium from the NUMEC plant in Apollo, Pennsylvania, during the Johnson administration, and how much of the CIA's investigation of the plant, owned by a dedicated supporter of Israel, Zalman Shapiro, has been kept from the public's eyes. There is one person, however, who has been following this case for years and is not about to let go of it. I'm speaking of Grant Smith, director of IRMEP, the Institute for Research in Middle East Policy, a frequent guest on this program, whose 2012 book, Divert, about which I interviewed him, dealt with the theft by Israel of enriched uranium essential for its nuclear weapons program, about which not even our president will say a word. On October 29th, Smith won another battle in federal court, outmaneuvering lawyers for the Justice Department and the CIA to win the right to file additional damning documents against their defense before the court issues a summary judgment. IRMIP's lawsuit, which seeks thousands of CIA files relating to the diversion, is a follow-up on another court victory in August that compels the CIA to release 130 pages of documents exposing its knowledge about Israel's role in the affair going back to 1968. In court, Smith argued that the CIA's involvement in NUMEC gave IRMIP all the CIA files known to exist under a rarely applied law called the 1984 CIA Information Act, which noted that, quote, Congress made sure that in cases such as the CIA program MKUltra, which was an LSD and mind-controlled experiment conducted on Americans, that people could get files on that if there had been an investigation of the CIA. The same goes with Operation Chaos, when they conducted operations against Vietnam protesters on American soil. So Congress especially said that if the plaintiff can show that there has been an investigation of wrongdoing of the CIA, that the plaintiff has the right to obtain a search of operational files, end quote. And Judge Tanya Chutkan agreed. What if IRMUP's goals in pursuing the release of all CIA files is that victims of radiation poisoning at the Apollo, Pennsylvania, NUMEC site, both the living and relatives of those who have passed away, and those who have suffered property losses can sue Israel and perhaps the CIA for compensation? And now the last word about the Oslo Accords, which Prime Minister Rabin was given the Nobel Prize, along with Arafat, for signing. I want to quote Shlomo Gazit, a former head of Israeli military intelligence, who was one of Israel's negotiators at Oslo. He spoke about the subject at San Francisco Congregation Beth Shalom on November 17, 1993, which I attended and surreptitiously recorded. During the question period, he found himself, as well as the Israeli government, accused by a raving member of the congregation of participating in a Munich-type sellout by signing the Declaration of Principles with the PLO at Oslo. "Well, I don't like making comparisons with Germany," Gazit calmly replied, "but if it's another Munich, we're the Germans and the Palestinians are the Czechs." This is Jeff Blank for Thanks for Listening.